Shattering This is devoted to those who know that there is something horribly wrong with the political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions which are controlling our world. We realize that they are the problem, and therefore repopulating them with those of different ideologies cannot be the solution. Our mission is to look behind the headlines, to know who is perpetrating the tragedies that are besieging our planet, because based upon this plague of adverse influences, we have, at most, 15 years before the collapse of the world as we know it. As a result of this plague, which cannot be stopped, in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only reliable escape. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion is toll-free, 877-300-7645. I'd like to begin with some housekeeping issues and some cleaning up some things that we had said in a prior program, as well as introduce a couple of emails that were responding to things that we talked about in yesterday's program. Jim, a listener from a long time, wrote, apparently, he was speaking of that shark attack, and what would you do if somebody was dangling their foot off of a kayak and they were being besieged by a shark? You know, would you go off and risk your life by swimming in bloody water with a circling shark to rescue a person that you did not know who was behaving in a manner that was not particularly smart? Well, Jim wrote, apparently shark attacks are surging in Hawaii. I think there were somewhere around 12 shark attacks this year in Hawaii. So if that's a surge, then yes, there are sharks that live in the ocean. And as a result of this surge in shark attacks to around 12 this year, the Hawaiians have launched, in conjunction with U.S. government, a two-year study to figure out why sharks are attacking. Maybe because they're hungry. Well, of course, dangling one's foot, Jim wrote, over a kayak while fishing has nothing to do with it. Yes, you see, sharks are wired. They're literally wired to detect electrical anomalies in the water. There's an electrical discharge that a fish or a mammal gives off when they appear to be in distress. And, you know, it's pretty hard to hide the fact that a fish with a hook in its mouth that is being dragged through the water in a direction that it does not want to go would be sending off such signals. And if the shark is responding to such signals, as the fisherman with the wounded, injured, captured fish on the line dangles his foot off the side of a kayak, he is likely to get bitten. So we certainly need that study. Speaking of the change that I have witnessed while driving, people's driving behavior cross country, I received this letter from Dan yesterday. He says, I'm writing to confirm your police state experience on the way back to California. I've been making frequent road trips between New York and Alabama. I noticed a negative difference in the general attitude of highway patrol and regular police beginning in August, particularly in the South. Boy, this is exactly what I recognized. And it was more on my trip from the West Coast to the East that I noticed this rather stark negative difference in the attitude and the approach of highway patrol and police. It was something you say, you know, that's the last thing I want to get involved in. And it was manifest, you know, blatantly before our eyes in New Mexico, where the woman and her children were pulled over by a domineering police officer in the Taos area of New Mexico. You know, and he just went ballistic. He tried to arrest the woman and tasered her son and then with his baton trying to break out the window of his car, all for a speeding ticket. And then another policeman shows up and starts firing his revolver into the back of the car that's filled with young children. Now, that kind of attitude says, you know, I don't want any part of this. There's a belligerency that now exists amongst police. Now, he went and continued to write. He says, we're 75 miles an hour was the normal flow of traffic. Just 2 weeks after he noticed this attitude change, it was 70 miles per hour or below. Now, that's exactly what I witnessed. I mean, on this trip on the way back, normally, you know, if you're driving 9 to 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, you're in the majority. You are in the vast majority of cars that are in that anywhere from 5 to 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. And what I've noticed is that corresponding to the attitude shift in police, people are slowing way down. Most of the cars, maybe 70 to 80% of the cars that I was driving along with were driving at or below the speed limit. They were like just little lemmings, like, you know, drive my car, don't cause any kind of a ruckus, don't get caught, don't get pulled over. I mean, it's behavior change on a societal level can be witnessed just by getting out and driving and noticing what the cause and effect. And that's exactly what Dan is communicating. He said, there are also greater involvement of local police and sheriff's deputies on the interstate highway. I've noticed that as well, too. Along with a plethora of shiny new cars and some sort of photography strobe speed measuring system. Yeah, they're unbelievably well equipped. I mean, it's our nation and our states and municipalities may be bankrupt, but we're spending money hand over fist creating a police state. Really creepy, he writes. Dark. Quite discernible. I agree, Dan. Thanks for the letter. I read a headline this morning. It's on something we talked about yesterday. The headline reads, Biden's bid to ease China tensions. The headline was written by the BBC. It's maybe the BBC is just one step above here, SRN, where we had to listen to Biden giving a speech that talked about how we could really have a swell relationship with China if we just got the terms of our relationship right. Can you imagine thinking that Biden is trying to ease tensions with China when his administration, the Barack Hussein Obama administration, is flying B-52s through their airspace? Now, keep in mind, this air defense zone, the United States has an air defense zone of twice the width around the entire United States. All China has is a air defense identification zone that's about half of the width over over about 10%, 20% perhaps, somewhere between 10 and 20% of the latitudinal distance that you find around the United States. We've had it for years. The terms and conditions are the same that China imposed. The consequence is the same that China imposed. It is, if you want to fly into an area that approaches the landmass of a nation, you have to identify yourself. They want to know if you're friend or foe. All you have to do is, if I want to fly from the Bahamas, for example, into the United States or someplace in the Caribbean, back into the mainland of the United States, I have to follow flight plan. I then, when I'm on that flight plan, have to have a transponder that identifies my aircraft. I've got to squawk a discrete code. I have to talk to air traffic control. And when I land in the United States, I have to go to a customs office directly. I have to land at an airport that has a customs office. I mean, these are the rules. And we have an air defense zone around Washington, D.C., yes, an ADIZ around Washington, D.C. If you're a pilot, you have to take a class to prove that you understand the rules regarding it. If you fly anywhere near it and you don't identify yourself, they'll scramble fighter jets. And yet, as total hypocrites, when China establishes a smaller version, a less restrictive version of the same thing, the United States responds by flying B-52s through their air defense zone. And by the way, in the area where it's taking place and we're taking Japan's side, Japan's air defense zone is much larger than is China's in the same disputed area. It's astonishing. And so hear these reporters between SRN and the BBC saying that Biden is in a bid to ease China tensions. Well, the Chinese have said that Joe Biden ought not repeat his erroneous remarks on China's new air defense zone when he speaks in Beijing. On Friday, China scrambled fighter jets to monitor U.S. and Japanese planes flying in the area. Nothing says peace like military hardware. Tokyo has told its national carriers not to file flight plans with the Chinese side when transiting the zone. In other words, unless you're absolutely crazy, you ought not fly on a Japanese flag carrier. You know, if the United States would shoot them down, you know, we have shot down, just as the Russians have, we have shot down civilian jet airliners in the past. And we did it over Iran's coastal waters. The Russians did it not too far from South Korea. Well, the Chinese will do it too. And it'll be nobody's fault other than the Japanese. I mean, is it foolish for doing it? Absolutely. But why would you poke somebody in the eye for doing something, taunting them that you already do? The United States government expected its carriers. By the way, the U.S. doesn't have carriers. I mean, this is just a journalistic disaster by the BBC. The United States does not have air carriers. Many countries around the world do. I mean, the fiefdoms in the Middle East all have their private air fleets. Yeah, but the Taiwanese have a national carrier where the airline is literally owned by the state. It's very common for countries to own a national airline. That is not the case in the United States. American Airlines is not a U.S. carrier. It's a private business, as is United. Anyway, it has notified American-based carriers, shall we say, that they should operate consistent with the notices issued by foreign countries. More in a moment. Yes, indeed. The United States has told air carriers that, you know, you really ought to obey the notams issued by foreign countries. A notam is a notices to airmen. This air defense identification zone is not a military kind of thing. It's a notice to airmen to identify yourself by A, filing a flight plan, and B, talking to the authorities that control that airspace. On Wednesday, Chinese state military criticized Mr. Biden's comments. If the United States is truly committed to lowering tensions in the region, it must first stop acquiescing to Tokyo's dangerous brinkmanship. And that's true. What Tokyo was saying is we're going to fly Japanese carriers through the error identification zone, and we're not going to comply with any of the NOTAMs, which we're going to subject our passengers and crews and our aircraft to being trailed by fighter jets. That is dangerous brinkmanship, particularly when Japan has a similar air identification zone. In fact, it's even larger. It added that Mr. Biden should not simply repeat the U.S.'s previous erroneous and one-sided remarks. That's true. The United States used to represent a breath of fresh air, one of the few places in the world where at least some semblance of truth was communicated and that which was moral and legitimate and rational and logical emanated. And now we are a source of erroneous, one-sided, propagandist remarks. Chinese defense military spokesman Zheng Yongxing said this week that the zone, quote, is not aimed at any specific country or target, and it certainly does not constitute a threat towards any country or region, end quote. And the same would be said about the air identification zones, air defense identification zones, ADIZ, of most countries in the world. China's military is fully capable, however, of exercising effective control over the zone, Mr. Ging added. Well, you know, it's as if this administration wants world war. And it has taunted the Russians. It has taunted the Chinese. It has taunted Team Islam. What is this administration trying to achieve if it's not world war? Why would you threaten to do such things, militarily be provocative in this way? I mean, this is not an isolated incident regarding China. I mean, Obama has said that he no longer wants America warring in the Islamic world or against Islam and wants to reposition and has begun repositioning American military assets in the Pacific to constrain China. That was his big change. Change we can believe in. Well, his change was moving the emphasis out of the Islamic world and positioning it towards China. And now he's flying bombers through the air defense zone. And this after he pushed the U.S. Navy into positions around Syria so that it would have to fly cruise missiles and bombers over the Russian fleet to bomb a Russian ally in Syria, not recognizing that doing so would be a catalyst to world war. Yesterday we talked about the Iranian coup, the ability of Iran to outsmart the Obama administration, get everything that they wanted and give up nothing in return. Well, in a speech yesterday, Iran stated emphatically that it will not dismantle any of its nuclear facilities as part of an effort to reach a long-term agreement to limit its nuclear development, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said. His interview was published in the Financial Times. Asked during the interview if dismantling Iran's nuclear facilities was a red line to, quote, the Obama threat in Syria, Rouhani said 100%. Rouhani's statements are likely not to sit well with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has said that any long-term agreement with Iran over its nuclear development must lead to dismantling of the country's nuclear capability. Actually, CNN, the opposite is true. This is precisely what Benjamin Netanyahu told the world, who didn't want to listen. And this message is consistent with what the United States negotiated, so it should not be surprised as well. And most of the world will simply yawn. Another deal was written by those in control that push us ever closer to world war. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shatteringness. If you'd like to have a window into what the world would be like with Iran, armed with a nuclear bomb and able to influence more adroitly countries under their purview, all you really have to do is look at Iraq. When Iraq was controlled by Saddam Hussein, the dictator, very few acts of terrorism took place. On an average year, there would be one or two terrorist attacks, mostly by Sunnis, occasionally by Saddam's regime. And when Saddam perpetrated a terrorist attack, it was always in conjunction with the Iranian war, where he found communities like the Kurds working against the Iraqis in favor of the Iranians. But very, very infrequent. Well, today, Iraq is controlled by Iran. And so this is what you would witness in a nation influenced by Iran. It's the same thing that we witness in Syria and now ever more frequently in Lebanon. CNN reports acts of terror and sectarian violence. Now, They put an and there. Acts of terror and sectarian violence killed 659 Iraqis and injured almost 1,400 in November. You know, it is it's astonishing that they could put an and, sectarian violence and acts of terror. You see, terror is a tactic, and sectarian means religious. And in this part of the world, there's only one surviving religion, and it's Islam. And so it is Islamic terrorism. You know, there's always a perpetrator of the tactic. You know, in the Civil War, it was northern terrorism against the South. And to end the World War II, America terrorized both the Germans and Japanese civilians. This terrorism is purely Islamic. It's not an and here. Islamic modifies terror. It describes the source, the means, the purpose of the terror. If we don't make these kinds of connections and we instead separate these thoughts, we have no hope of understanding why it is essential that we oppose Islam. Well, this reads, acts of terror and sectarian violence killed 559 people and injured 1,400 in November, according to the casualty figures released by the United Nations. Bombings account for many of the deaths. Bombings. Now, even here, bombings. When you think of bombings, you think of the B-52 that's flying over China, and a bombing is where an aircraft drops a bomb. That's what we did to Japanese cities and what we did to German cities, not military sites, but civilian centers in World War II. We dropped bombs. Well, if you're going to be accurate here, why not define the kind of bombings? Suicide bombings. They're suicide bombings. It's a signature move of Islam. Bombings account for many of the deaths, but UN officials warn that they're seeing a surge in execution-style killings that, quote, have been carried out in a particularly horrendous and unspeakable manner, end quote, said Nikolay Meldov, the special representative of the United Nations Secretary General for Iraq. Yes, we took a country, the United States, invaded a country that was controlled by a secular dictator. And we said, oh, that secular dictator, he's inhuman, he's a butcherist, he kills his own people. We're justified in going in and ousting him. We're on the side of good and on God and doing the moral thing. And what was the consequence? The country became resolutely Islamic, controlled by the Shia mullahs in Tehran. And now what do we witness? A surge of execution-style killings that have been carried out in a particularly horrendous and unspeakable manner. Cause and consequence. It's the thing that Americans don't seem to be able to understand these days. Americans still don't understand what they did in Iraq that was so horrendously wrong. Turning a bad situation into a much worse situation. And how doing so has spilled out, not only in Iraq, but now in Syria. And even in Lebanon. Two groups of execution-style killings were discovered yesterday. When Iraqi security forces found another 13 unidentified bodies, each person had their head blown off. This is a quote. It says, the Iraqi authorities should take immediate steps to find and hold accountable the perpetrators of these crimes and to implement effective measures to ensure the protection of all civilians, end quote. This is the United Nations representative. The perpetrator of the crime is Islam. If you want to hold someone accountable, then you can look in two places. The leadership, the religious leadership of Iran, that has created this war between Shias and Sunnis and the United States for breaking this country and leaving it in this condition and then arming it in the process. In fact, in the United States, if you want to blame an individual, our next topic will be General Petraeus. He's the man most responsible. So far this year, 7,157 civilians and 952 Iraqi security forces have died in sectarian violence. Muslims killing Muslims. 8,000 people dead because of what we did. And leading that charge was General Petraeus. General Petraeus, the U.S. general who gave us the Surge and the Awakening Councils, one of which served as a bridge between Iraq's civil wars and the other as the catalyst for Syria's civil war. Remember, he was also the director of the CIA, who admitted, after he was caught, for having an affair with Paula Broadwell. Paula was the author of his biography called All In, The Education of General David Petraeus. Well, after resigning from the CIA, he wants to teach in a college in New York. Imagine taking one of his classes. If you recall, this brilliant military strategist, as he was called, and now master of moral fortitude in the intelligence community, was brought down after his affair came to light in a rather messy fashion. Broadwell, who was accused of sending harassing emails to a Florida socialite who was friends with the general's family, prompted her to complain to an acquaintance who worked at the FBI. You had two social-climbing political types of these two women that were in a catfight in southern Florida. Investigators traced the emails to Broadwell, and of course, and in the course of doing so, now this is the woman, this woman who was threatening this other woman for trying to have access to her man, who she was having an affair with, who wrote the general's biography. Well, they found that the general and she were having an affair. And though the affair would have violated military rules, you can't commit adultery in the U.S. military as an officer. According to the CIA, which he was working at the time, it's not a breach of their ethics. They don't have any ethics. But it would make him vulnerable to compromise. Months after stepping down, Petraeus made it known that he would now seek a career in academia because, after all, he was the sharpest tool in the shed. The New York Times reported in July that Petraeus would teach a seminar for just $1, following a report by Gawker.com that indicated that he was paid $200,000 for that same class. Now he's being heckled, as he should be. His awakening councils were the initial catalyst for the Syrian civil war. His surge served as the bridge between the two Iraqi civil wars, both of which the United States instigated. The deaths of over 100,000 people stain his soul. One that has no moral compunction whatsoever. Speaking of Syria, a United Nations fact-finding team has found massive evidence that the highest levels of the Syrian government are responsible for war crimes in the nation's longest-running civil war, the UN human rights chief said on Monday. Make this perfectly clear. I have said and will continue to say that Bashar al-Assad and his family are ruthless thugs. He is amongst the most despicable dictators in the world. His father was even worse. However, while that is true, those that are fighting against his government are far worse. Now, that means that the United States nor any country in the world cannot engage in this war without siding with evil. It is true that Bashar al-Assad's government has perpetrated unspeakable acts of horror against Sunnis in Syria. And it is true that Sunnis in Syria and Sunnis from around the world have perpetrated unspeakable acts of horror against Shia Syrians. The panel's members have outlined their view that the facts point to the commission of very serious crimes, war crimes, against humanity. Pillay, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, told reporters in Geneva, Switzerland, they point to the fact that the evidence indicates responsibility at the highest level of the government, including the head of state. So, yes, when you threaten an evil man with loss of his life and his power and his wealth, he will respond back in unscrupulous ways. That is just the reason that you don't do such things. It's the reason that the United States invasion of Iraq, which empowered Iran, which created this mess in the first place, was a really, really bad idea. We've created a living hell in Syria. And while one side is better than the other, they are both evil. Pillay, who is the spokesperson for the United Nations, said that the evidence shows that the rebels have committed a vast array of war crimes as well. And she pointed to the fact that the majority of the deaths, more than 100,000 since the Civil War began in 2011, all as a direct result of America's invasion of Iraq, are from, quote, unlawful attacks with conventional weapons, not from chemical weapons, which have gotten much more attention in recent months because of the idiocy of the President of the United States. The presence of chemical weapons inspectors has not stopped the influx of conventional weapons into Syria's civil war. As recently as September, U.S. officials confirmed that they sent artillery to Syria. They described their artillery as light weapons, some anti-tank weapons, and anti-aircraft ammunition. All to the Syrian rebels. Think about that. You know, when you view pictures now of Syria, it's not just the one side and the other touting AK-47s. No. The rebels have anti-tank weapons. They have surface-to-air missiles. They have rocket-propelled grenades. They have 50-caliber machine guns. They have truck-mounted anti-aircraft guns. Yes, this is what we have done. The people have been killed because we have supplied weapons to the jihadists. Well, in Syria, President Bashar al-Assad has made winning back the outskirts of Damascus his main priority. Abu Salem, the commander in charge, says that there are many foreign jihadists amongst the rebels that his forces have encountered. Yes, this war, while it was initially begun as Sunni Muslims from Iraq providing the weapons to turn peaceful demonstrations into a civil war against the Shiite government, it is now primarily a proxy war sponsored on one side by the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, and sponsored on the other side by Iran, China, and Russia. And that in this war, you now have a very substantial percentage, if not even perhaps the majority, of the most ruthless jihadists, certainly the leaders in the jihadi movement now, coming from foreign countries. This has become the great jihad in Islam. This is a quote from the commander in charge of freeing the Damascus suburbs. He says, the fighters are from foreign countries, and as are all of their leaders, especially from places like Libya, Chechnya, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Yes, indeed. This has become the great jihad. Sunnis recognize that Shia Muslims represent only 10% of Islam, but they're the fly in the ointment, according to the main block of Islamic thinking, and that Sunni Muslims represent 90% of Muslims. The only way for them to, for there to be a united caliphate, a United Nations of Islam, is for the influence of Shia Islam to be thwarted, to be silenced, to be muted, to be murdered. And so in Syria, it is considered by Sunnis to be the last jihad. This opportunity to fully eradicate Shia Islam so that all of Team Islam can be united under a singular caliphate. And then as a result of uniting all of Islam, that it will be Islam against the rest of the world. That is what they're envisioning. That is what is happening in Syria. That is the side that the United States is arming, is the side that wants a united Islam so that it can pose its will on the entire world. This is not just a civil war inside of Syria. This is a war of Sunni Muslims against Shia Muslims, the great jihad. And that the great preponderance of the fighters are for countries like Libya, Chechnya, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. One opposition leader in the east region around Damascus, who calls himself Abu Karim, called the army's siege of rebel-held areas a genocide. So the rebel who is attacking the government is accusing the government of genocide as opposed to applying the label to himself. He says, we're facing a severe shortage of medicine and all medical supplies. They are basically non-existent. We've gone back to the Stone Age.